Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout each month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I continue to be the host for this fun discussion show on the first and third Tuesday of each month. Wednesdays features Circle of Nature with none other than Selena Fox. The second and fourth Friday of each month features Songs of the Pagan Tribe, hosted by my friend Kern Greenman. Less talk, more pagan music. He explores the songs, people, and the wonderful, inspiring world of pagan music. The third Friday of each month features Blue Marble, an eco-educational, eco-restorational, and eco-spirituality podcast that features adventures, stories about climate impacts with climate solutions, and how you can manifest good energy for our planet. Would you like to celebrate the full moons with community? Then celebrate the next full moon online with the Circle Sanctuary community. The theme is Pinnacle Power and takes place on Tuesday, April 23rd. Full moon circles begin at 7 p.m. Central Time, which is 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain, or 4 p.m. Pacific Time. Circle Sanctuary full moon circles include invocations, music, meditations, poetry, reflections, and ritual workings. They are facilitated by Circle Sanctuary ministers Reverend Selena Fox and Reverend Judith Sizes, plus other members of the Circle Sanctuary community. Those joining online are invited to bring a candle to kindle during the ritual and are invited to interact with others in the chat on YouTube. Attendance is free and no registration is required. For more information, please go to circlesanctuary.org. Have you always been drawn to dragons, but not sure how to begin to work with dragon energy? Well, you're in luck, because tonight on Circle Talk, we're going to be talking with author Virginia Chandler, who is the author of the new book, Year of the Magical Dragon. Her hands-on book features journaling prompts, altar work, and extensive dragon lore, making it a must-have resource for your practice. Virginia is going to talk with us on how to connect to dragons, what it means to practice dragon magic, and how we're going to be able to do it throughout the whole year. Virginia Chandler comes from Atlanta, Georgia. She's the author of Year of Magical Dragon and Seeking Dragons, and we're going to talk about both books tonight. She has worked with John Matthews on several books focusing on Arthurian lore and legend, including Arthurian magic. Virginia is the author of several fiction books and a former first officer of the national organization Covenant of the Goddess. She is active in her local Druid and pagan community and can be found online at virginiachandler.org. Let's welcome Virginia to Circle Talk. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. That was a nice intro.
Well, I'm very, very excited. I got a chance to read both your books and they are wonderful.
Oh gosh. Well, thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed
them. Tell me, and we're mostly going to be talking about your book tonight, Year of the Dragon, but I think your first book, Seeking Dragons, is so instrumental. I think everybody should buy them both so that it really gives a lead in. But tell me about your path. When did you grow up pagan?
I did not. No, I grew up Air Force brat, but primarily in the Southern U.S. So, not hardcore Christian, but was raised Christian. And mm-hmm. But now I've been a pagan witchy, chick for probably about 25 years now. So it's been a little while.
That's so fun. So how did that call out to you, or was, I know, what was the first step you took in that part of your path?
Well, I think I say this in one of the books of the intro. I can't remember which one now, but, you know, I think a lot of people feel this very young. You probably came across a fairy tale, or if you're younger than I am, a movie or something portraying dragons. And I was very drawn to, I love dragons, but it wasn't from like a dragon slayer point of view. You know, I thought it was horrible that they were out hunting the dragons and the dragon was the bad guy. And I just, I felt like there was something more there from a very early age. Obviously, no idea of any esoteric kind of, you know, meaning or connotation to that. So it wasn't until I became a goddess worshiper that I kind of went, I wonder, you know, if that this deep intuitive, I guess, call or connection that I felt with that type of mythological creature. And I've always believed that some of these creatures, there's a reason that there are so many stories about them and so many cultures, you know, refer to them. And so that's kind of what happened. After I became a goddess worshiper, I just kind of started thinking that maybe there's something more to this than just, hey, I really like dragons. And there wasn't a whole lot out there actually at the time. We're talking, the internet was really a little, you know, I'm dating myself, but you know, there was no Wikipedia or anything like that out there. Certainly not a lot of, or if any, pagan websites at the time. So, and very few books. So my practice started just with meditating, taking what I had, which was myths and stories and some of my own experiences. And it's been that long of a path, you know, we're talking, I won't say my entire life, but a good bit of it. And it's, very experiential, I think, which I think paganism is for most people, you know, it's your own experience. Yeah. So that's kind of how it went. And then I did discover some books finally did come along by DJ Conway. I loved her books. I know I've, you know, heard good and bad from folks what they think about them, but I personally love them. There were a few more titles along the way, but again, there's just not a whole lot out there, pagan wise, that had a practice, or, you know, if you want to try it, maybe you should, you know, you could try it this way sort of thing. That wasn't out there yet.
Something I did like about you, Year of the Dragon book, is that if you are a seasoned practitioner and this is a type of energy or that you want to work with, you give a lot of suggestions, and we're going to talk about going through the year. But if you are new, in the very first part of the book, you do a really good job of setting up ritual and how to go about that whole process. Why did you include that in your book?
Well, you know, I had a little bit of that in there when I on the first draft of the book, and then Llewellyn, I have to give them credit for this. They were like, no, you know, when you're, and I had been practicing for a while, when you're a seasoned practitioner, trying to tell somebody how to like back up and do it, and like, wait a minute, how I'll do this. Luckily, I had some very good teachers, and when I was coming up from Little Baby Witch, and they were very basic. They taught me some very good basics, and that's primarily what I'm passing along. Not the dragon part, but setting up your altar, setting up sacred space,
ritual space, sacred space. You do a really good space. Job with that,
right? There's so many different names for it these days, and you know. It's and I did it first in Arthurian magic with John and Caitlin Matthews. One of the parts that I contributed to that book was how to set up an Arthurian ritual and an Arthurian altar and sacred space. So, and they're very similar because I mean that's what I do. You know, I'm not gonna. What one thing about Year of the Magical Dragon is my group, we did all those rituals before the book even came out because you know I was like, I wonder what's gonna happen. Let's do this. Make sure nothing weird goes on.
And see what comes. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, what I put out there, I have definitely experienced, had a good experience with it. I don't, you know, I don't tell people the, you know, the bad stuff or stuff you do wrong, or maybe you should do it better next time. But so it's very similar, and it's what my teachers taught me, really, with a dragon flavor to it.
So it's interesting too, because I have worked a tiny, tiny bit with dragons. Actually, many years ago, I utilized that type of energy for protection. So, and I included the energy, and we'll talk a little about that later. But something I loved that I had not thought of is I have a tendency to put dragons in the south for the element of fire and that transformative energy and that protection.
Yeah.
But you do such a good job when you call your dragon circle. You talk about elemental dragons, and I hadn't thought of that. Tell us about elemental dragons.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, again, this is experiential for me, right? So I can honestly say that, that's what happened.
It was really cool.
In my tradition, the tradition I was trained in, when we cast a circle, you know, we cast the elemental circle, and then we match it with elemental callings. They're different than what I have in the dragon book, but it's the same purpose. Right. And we call them, and most people do, ancient mighty ones or something along those lines. Again, I put a dragon flavor on it. So it's, you know, we're calling the ancient and mighty dragon spirits. Cause, honestly, the first time that I did a circle and I was trying to connect with dragons, and I was doing it my traditional way where I was calling in what I already knew or was comfortable with, it didn't really mesh, you know, the dragon energy felt very much like, an observer, not a participant. You know, and so that's why I kind of put the whole dragon flavor in there. You know, I'm not calling a god and goddess, which I normally do in a typical ritual. And it certainly, at least for my group, like I said, we did all of them, it'll fire a circle up. You know, it's very powerful. Yeah, it's got a lot of oomph to it.
And I will tell our listeners, if you purchase the book, Year of the Dragon, she has actual invocations for Earth Dragon, Fire Dragon, Water Dragon, and Air Dragon in here that are beautiful and that, you know, give you a place to start. So, yeah, I had not thought of that before. So I thought that is very, very powerful. So.
Well, yeah, I wanted to give a template, you know, for me when I was first starting out. And I think I even say in the book, you know, if you've been doing this for a few minutes, you know, you're probably going to very quickly find the way you like doing this. You know, this is just a template. This is not the recipe, you know, per se. But for the beginner, and again, this is what Llewellyn brought up to me after I turned in the first draft. They're like, well, we got to think about the people who maybe have never done this. Right. And I thought, oh. Okay. So we included recipes for incense. We included oils.
I thought that was very clever. And I am a seasoned practitioner, but if I'm a practitioner in a specific tradition or have a certain way, do you know what I mean? This opens up a new door and new experiences. And so, yeah, I thought it was really, really good how you created it. And I think I'm not unusual that most people edit better than they create. I can take a template that you did and use it and then do research and create other things with it. And that's how I do my personal practice. It's just much easier than starting with a blank slate. I thought that was really, really, really good. Something else you did that I thought was really clever that I liked, because I'm a journaler and a planner, is that you give journal prompts. Tell us about that.
I am a hardcore journaler and always have been. I mean, from very young age, I was always, you know, I had my little diary when I was a kid with the little key and everything, but even going into, my young adulthood and even till today, I'm a hardcore journaler, and it's so good for hindsight. I mean, For me personally, maybe at first what you experience, just, you know, you keep seeing one simple color or something keeps happening, but you have no idea what it is. And then you go back a year later, you know, and you read your journal entry for, you know, summer solstice or whatever, and you're like, oh my God, you know, and that's how you learn your own symbols and your own magical language is you got to look for these patterns.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And the only way that I have found for me, because I'm not, this is just the way that I do it. You know, you experience these things, you write them down, and then you revisit them. And I don't like overdo that in the book, but I do think I say several times, write this down, come back later and read it or write some more or whatever it makes you feel like, because it's just a good way for you to, like I said, figure out your own magical language and your ritual language.
Yeah.
And no, how they're talking really to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you do a really good job with that. And also, I think anytime there's things in a book that kind of give you permission or encouragement to process what you've read, that you utilize it and you read it. I mean, you remember it, and you're more likely to use it.
Well, so, you know, I was a teacher for, you know, for many years, English literature teacher, and my background is education. So now that you've said that, it just triggered in me. Well, you know, that's I probably learned that in college, I bet. But it is a good reinforcement. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And I'm someone, because I'm an avid reader, and then I will have guests on our show. And like, I've already decided, like, I will attempt, I've read this book, and I have a tendency to read a book for a show, and then I'll go back and reread and study and write notes and do whatever. And so I thought, there are things in here, I'm going to take a month, and I'm going to try this path and see. So yeah. And I encourage everyone else to purchase the book and try to do the same thing. That's what's so exciting. Again, when you, you know, we talked about being a seasoned practitioner. I think that, and a dollar will buy you a paper, because when you're seasoned in one area, there's this whole vast world that you don't know about. And so, yeah. And so it's like, what? And I have talked to new people. I have talked to people and totally changed things about my own practice based on something that they may have even stumbled into. So yeah. So books like this, I think, are, even if you maybe don't think this is your path, you really don't know until you try. I really believe that.
That's true. And, you know, and my group is not a, we're not a dragon magic group per se. We're witchy, we're witches. But, you know, there was one year that we did all of our Sabbats. We did four Sabbats druidic, because we have a couple of people in the group that are also practicing druids. And then the other four rituals were Arthurian, the Sabbats. So we keep our moons pretty witchy. But the Sabbats, since they're celebratory, at least we feel a little more freedom to kind of get out there and get in touch with something else and, you know, go out and celebrate with that energy.
So in your first book, which is Seeking Dragons, you talk about heeding the call of the dragon and dragon archetypes. Talk to us a little bit about that, about the call of the dragon. How do you know when that energy is calling to you to work with?
I think it's a particular flavor of experience, and I think a lot of people feel it. I mean, it's, you know, for, and even now you're looked at as you're kind of weird or strange or whatever, you know, we're all pagans, we're used to that, but it's people are drawn to very particular creatures, whether they're real ones, you know, I'm a cat person, I'm a dog person. But when you start going to the mythological creatures, people go, oh, you're a dragon person. Oh, you're a, you know, unicorn. And unicorns got a bad rap right now. You know, it's like, it's such a cliche at this point. But I think the call of the dragon is when you really feel that intuitive kind of gut feeling, I think we call it. When you, as a people who never walk a magical path are going to experience that as, wow, I really like dragons. I really want to get into dragons, you know, dragon t-shirts, dragon posters, everything else. And their experience is a good one. I mean, you know, they're enjoying what they're doing. But for magical people, it kind of goes a little deeper that, and you feel it resonate. And as you read the old myths, if you read them when you were younger, go back and read them again. They'll be completely different, especially as magical people. You know, when you read the myth of say Fafnir from Scandinavia, you know, as a young kid, you know, it's a dragon guarding a treasure and this guy's coming to get it and he slays the dragon. Right. Completely different story from a witchy point of view. I think we know that on some level. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I mean by the call of the dragon. It's like, oh, there's something more here. This is not just a story.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. Like I said, I've only had one real experience, and it was protection. And for me, because that is not an energy or an archetype that I had really worked with. And this is years ago. And I was trying to get layers. You know what I mean? What things could I gather around me? And I was going to start doing rituals. And what could I do? And that literally just popped in my head. And I went, and I still have it. I got a children's golden, shiny, stuffed animal dragon. Like a teddy bear, but it was a dragon.
Right, right.
And put that in the south and utilized that. And it was really meaningful to me, as little knowledge of I had it over the time. So it's really interesting. And again, I think books like yours really help people who maybe have had those kind of experiences kind of explore them more and see what that may mean and how, what you can do with that in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. That's kind of like really, not that I had like a goal other than just to share experience and knowledge, but if I had a goal for both of those books, it would be, I hope people do take it another step like that. You know, it's like, oh, this kind of happened. Maybe I'll explore that a little bit. You know, I think that by doing that and working with the energy of the dragons, they get more interested in us the more interest we show in them. Otherwise, you know, they're happy to be left alone. And that's kind of where the archetypes come in. Because, you know, for me, Protector was my first experience with dragon energy as well. Oh, yeah. Every time I get on an airplane, which is not often anymore, I used to travel a lot, but I make that airplane into a dragon. I envision my big red dragon Protector coming down and basically just becoming, you know, the airplane. And so I think a lot of people see dragons as protectors. They either see them as the protectors of them, or they want to go and protect the dragon because the dragons get such a bad rap and everybody's trying to kill them, you know? And that's kind of where the archetypes come in. You were asking about that. Those are all my experience. That didn't come from, you know, nobody told me that. I didn't run across that any, you know, ancient text or anything like that. But from my experience, that seems to be the different types of dragons that I have, I guess, communed with would be a good word. They seem to settle into certain roles. Maybe they change them after so often. I don't know. But for me, that is how they have appeared to me. You know, you got the really old ancient, our ancestor dragons. And then, like you said, we got the protectors. We have weather dragons. I mean, there's just, and everybody's experience will be different. There's probably dragon types that, you know, none of us have met yet, maybe. So it's kind of exciting. It's kind of new territory that's really, really old.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if you've been a practitioner for a while, I understand, or my understanding of thought forms and energy and are very powerful. And so even if there's a relic that's not my faith, I recognize that it has extreme energy.
Right.
Because of longevity. And as you said, since ancient times, there has been some belief or talk about dragons or dragon type energy. So I would think that that energy thought form or that energy itself is very strong.
I would think so too. I was having brunch with some friends yesterday, and we were trying to, we were talking about egregores, basically. And in my, in my tradition, I've always heard it pronounced that way, egregore. And then somebody else yesterday was like, "Oh no, it's a Gregor." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So
I've heard of Gregor. I've always had egregores too.
Really? Okay. So whichever way you pronounce it out there, that's what we're talking about. And I think that the egregores of the dragons, again, like you said, ancient energy that, these days, I think in modern times right now, if you go to that energy, you try to connect with it. If you approach it the right way, I believe that will happen. But as I said, I also think it's very happy to be dormant and not interact with humans. I don't think it's something that is necessary on their part. At least what I've known about traditions and magic and stuff is there are some thought forms and, astral forms, esoteric, whatever you want to call them, that want to interact with us, enjoy it. Okay. They seek us out. But I don't necessarily see that as the dragon energy. Not yet. I hope that, I think at one time it was like that, like long, long, long time ago. But, I hope that is something that maybe will happen again, is that type of energy will be much more, not only approachable, but, the dragons will seek us again.
Right. And in your, book Seeking Dragons, you not only talk about archetypes and you do dragon rituals, including dragons, you also talk about offerings. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh yeah. Well, I have to give a little bit of credit here to some of you probably heard of RJ Stewart. Many years ago, I went to one of his workshops here in Atlanta, and he, is basically fairy tradition, but he was talking about the power of offerings, how regular doesn't have to be really big, anything. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to spend a lot of time,
it's a consistent effort.
Right. And that really stuck with me, obviously, cause this is probably 20 years ago. And I thought, really, and he was right. I mean, I started making, I would leave little bowls of milk and chocolate. and no, I didn't eat it myself, but out for the dragons in the south of my outdoor circle. Because at that time, I just had dragons in the south. And I did that I did it in the morning, too. It was really weird. I did it in the morning before I would go to work. I had a horrible commute to Atlanta, so I was up at the crack of dawn. And I would go put this in the south, in the morning, learn some useful things, like don't leave it on the ground, you learn the way so it's not just a horrible mess when you get home. But I did that for I moved from the place eventually, but for the year and a half or so I was there, I did that pretty much every morning. Occasionally something would get in the way. And it made a nice, solid
foundation,
but peaceful feel, connection too. And it was just milk and chocolate. Like, I'm not even talking a whole chocolate bar, I'm talking like a little chunk. Doesn't have to be anything big, but you're right, it's the effort, it's just the fact that you're doing it and you're doing it consistently.
I had a famous author or in a workshop talking about sometimes people get excited, especially if they're relatively new, and they'll, have this big ceremony that they've created, and they'll approach a god or goddess or a deity or a dragon archetype and say, "Hey, I'm here and this is what I want." And they said, if somebody walked up to you in the store and asked you for something, you're like, "No, you go, hey." And it's the same type of energy. It's like build a relationship.
Right.
Get to know it, be open to it. And so that's when I read that, I thought of that. That's probably a really good way to familiarize yourself and to do something magical little every day, which is another thing I think for a long time, like I'm talking many years ago, 80s and 90s, I think everything was really focused on ritual and doing circle. And yeah. Now I think people are hungry at trying to find out how I can live this path every day. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, I think that's indicative of what goes on down here in the physical world and us dealing with pandemics and the fact that we spent 2 years kind of isolated, you know, a year for sure, you know, right? Like my group, we didn't do ritual for, it's probably right at a year when the pandemic hit.
Wow.
And we're a small group, you know, we were very, very small, but we were like, no, nobody wants to get pandemic, COVID or from the pandemic. But, yeah, I think, see, I started out as a solitary. I'm in a group now, but I started out as a solitary and I still do a lot of work on my own, you know, my group, we even say, you know, we're all solitaries who just come together to do ritual. I think that for me, meditation, creating that sacred space, whether it's outside or inside, doesn't matter. But create that sacred space and energize it with offerings. If you can burn incense every day, you know, do it. Sometimes you can't always do that. If you can, just go in there and be quiet for a minute. Life is very busy. It's hard to find the time to do that, which of course makes it more meaningful if you're working with dragons or whomever.
Right.
The fact that you're doing it, you know, it doesn't need to be a chore. At first it may seem like that, you know, I think it's like, oh, okay, I need to go do this before I do whatever. Eventually it will start feeling like, at least I think it will, it'll start feeling very comfortable and you'll miss doing it if you're on the road or sick or whatever. And, you know, can't do it that day. I think that's almost a more, well, no, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say, you know, festivals were like the really big thing, like 20 years ago, like everybody go to a festival and let's do a really big ritual.
I love festival. I mean, Circle Sanctuary puts on Pagan Spirit Gathering, which is coming up in June. And it is, there's nothing like doing ritual with 1,000 people. So it's wonderful.
There's not. But I do think, and you guys get to do that once a year, you know, Covenant of the Goddess, I'm a member of that organization, was, you know, been an officer and locally and for 2 years as the first officer. And it is wonderful to get together with a bunch of other pagans and have ritual on that scale. But every day, you know, we're not able to do that. That's
Absolutely.
What you were saying. You know, how can you integrate this into your life, busy life, and not have it become, like I said, more of a chore than something that you really want to do. And it's just got to be simple, like you were saying, simple offerings, simple sacred space. It doesn't have to be a great effort. But the fact that you're doing it, that's the point.
Absolutely. And for me, time, because I'm really busy and I'm in a lot of different things, for me, time is an offering. So, doing time. And it's funny, I know this, so I don't know why. Like, if I put, I mean, the Hermetic principles are really dear to my practice. And so that momentum. So any effort I put out, I will get it. I say I get a gift, I will get a reward. I mean, and so I know that. So why am I not doing it more? So yeah, I think time is an offering. And for me, the gods only speak in whispers because I'm busy and loud. And so I have to be quiet or I don't hear it.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I was saying a bit ago about, you know, listening. For me, that's how the journaling, that's how that works. I guess in a way, it's almost a form of divination, you know, almost like an inner divination, because that gift of hindsight and then the experience since it happened, it can really open your eyes to some stuff that otherwise, you know, you just don't pay attention to it.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree. So let's go around the wheel of the year. First, before we start, that is so clever. What gave you that idea to go around the different sabbats with dragons? That was very clever.
Well, I've my group, we do a lot of the year and the day stuff. Like we will do what I talk about at the beginning of the book, the wheel walks. We will focus on something for that year. Like I said, 1 year we did half Druidic and we did half Arthurian, and we just carried that energy, that celebratory energy throughout that year. So the fact, the way doing a year and a day circle or a wheel walk was already a part of what I've been doing for, for a few minutes. So I was talking to a friend of mine who is an editor. She's one of my editors at Llewellyn, and she lives here in Atlanta as well. I've known her for a long time. And she's like, what do you think about, writing a book about dragons? And I was like, oh man, I don't know. Writing a book is terrifying, Publishing it and putting it out there is doubly terrifying. So it was a big leap for me to even share this stuff, I think that's one reason in the book I'm so insistent, like, hey, this was my experience, folks. Doesn't necessarily mean that this is what's going to happen, but this is what it happened. This is what happened to me. And so we were like, well, what about a book of rituals? And I'm actually working on a book right now for Esbits, which because we have two Esbits, every month, and actually 13 moons a year, there's a lot more rituals, right? So I did want to tackle that to begin with, and I haven't done that in a personal practice, not a whole year of them. And that book is not really being designed as a year and a day kind of thing. It's more like each lunar cycle is going to be a magical working. So, but Year of the Magical Dragon, we just took it around the whole wheel of the year, basically doing a wheel walk with dragons. And about halfway through writing it, I realized that people in the Southern Hemisphere were going to need, I was being very specific to where all of us live, So we had to go back and kind of vanilla that a little bit. That was kind of tricky. And then we were like, okay, we got to tell people how to do ritual anyway. So that's why we put the introduction in there. And then we threw in the incense and oils. 'Cause if you're going to throw a party, you might as
Talk
well.
about that. You do a really good job with that. Talk about, is that because I'm a big incense girl myself. I'm really lazy though. I have incense to purchase. I don't make them. And you've really encouraged me. Then you give really good recipes and very
Get
easy to.
your basic jars of whatever you end up liking. Some of them are really expensive these days, and so you gotta work within your own budget, right? But after you've done this a while, as you end up with like maybe six or seven jars of the stuff that you use all the time, and then mixing it is not that big of a chore. You kind of got to get your stuff in stock, and that it's not so challenging. But no, I'm like you. I'm all about buying incense. But typically for ritual, my group, we'd use the charcoal, and we use something that's already been that somebody has put together. I'm very fortunate that we have several members that love doing it, and we switch off rituals. So we don't. I don't do all the rituals every year in my group. We have quite a we, priests and priestesses. So so it's kind of a deal with us. I mean, sometimes we throw stick incense in there because we don't have what we needed. But typically we make that, and we're
And
all
that's
kind
just one
of
more layer to your rituals and to your magic is,
right.
participating is just one more layer, and that you can. After I've learned when I do things like that, the first time I tend to like totally follow the book, don't veer from
Yeah.
it. And then when
Right.
you get comfortable, then you can add. And that for me, that's
Yeah.
when the magic really happens because then you're putting your own layers in it, you're doing your own research. And again, for me, I realize the gods that I work with, time is an offering. So taking the time to look up, hey, what's a substitute,
Right.
or what can I
Yeah.
do? And I want to work with health or prosperity. What can I add to it? I just
Yeah.
think that time becomes part of the offering and part of the ritual for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I and I do kind of cheat with the oils now. I used to
Yeah, I love oils too. I love anointing oils.
Yeah, I nowadays I just take different oils and put mix them together. But you know, when I started all this and I was determined I was going to do it myself, you know, I would go and make them, which is whoo, people who really do that. Let me tell you what, they're putting some effort into it because I'm a lazy witch. I was like, oh no, this is too much. I'm just going to go buy these. Same as the incense, buy five or six that I really like and mix them as you know as it comes to me.
Absolutely, because smell is very powerful. I laugh
Oh
because,
yeah.
again, I've done aromatherapy, and I also like, I'm a real smoke and soak witch. So I like smells, and I like that, and I like the energetics of essential oil. But to be honest, my grandmother's house was covered with honeysuckle. So honeysuckle is not an
Oh,
essential
wow.
oil. It's a romantic oil, and it's man-made. But that scent does stuff for me magically, because that
Yeah.
scent becomes family for me because how I grew up. So yeah, I
Yeah.
tell people to really explore scents
Oh, yeah.
and see what memories it brings for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm like you. I'm definitely an incense junkie. Love it. Frankincense is probably my number one, but yeah, love them all.
That is so fun. So we are entering the time of Beltane. So tell us about Beltane and the Dragons of Making.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We just did the equinox, and I don't think it had anything to. Maybe I had mentioned this interview, but they were like, "Oh, let's do a dragon ritual." So we just did the waking dragon. What
Oh,
was it,
well,
2 weeks
tell us about
ago?
that.
Well, like I said, we had done it before, but we had not done it since then, I don't think, for the equinox. And I actually did lead this ritual. You know, this one was really fun. The first time that we did it, we were all very serious and, you know, listen, you know, thinking about waking, you know, from the slumber of sleep. And this time when we did it, we had a lot more fun with it. We were laughing about different things. Mainly, we're in the South, so we don't have that bad of winters. But you know, as a magical person, as you know, and everybody listening knows, coming out of the winter into the spring, and we're having a beautiful spring down here in the South right now. It is so pretty. So we were all just happy, 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 and it felt that way with the dragon energy. They was like, yeah, everybody's dancing. We're so glad it's springtime. We will not be doing the Dragons of Making, the Beltane dragons, but we have done that before, obviously. We're actually gonna cheat and go visit another group this year for Beltane. But yeah, we just did the Dragons of Waking, and we enjoyed that. It was and again, it was different, totally different the second time we did it.
That's so fun. And I'm going to give an example because I was impressed with the idea that these oils and incenses, because I have read some books, and I have books where they have very exotic ingredients that you can't really find. But to make a Dragons of Making incense oil is 2 tablespoons of frankincense oil, 7 drops of dragon's blood oil, 5 drops of patchouli, 3 drops of sandalwood, consecrated water, and 3 breaths of your own on the mix oils. I mean, that is fairly common things
Oh,
that
yeah.
anyone could put together. So I think that's really, makes it much easier for me to think, oh, I am going to try this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't have any exotic recipes, I think, of any kind. And I like I said, I use what I have on my shelf. And it's a very intuitive thing. I mean, you know what you're kind of going for, and the number of drops that I assign to each of the recipes has a magical connotation to it as well. And then of course you put the 3 breaths on there. So it's really, it's almost kind of like a spell in a way, you know. You're putting a little magic and a little juju in there before you light it up on the altar.
Well, Absolutely. And when I teach like anything, like to make incense or anything, you can put, you just, I'm a big layer person. So you can do that. And then you can, you know, take your tools, or you can draw symbols. You can,
yeah,
there's a lot of different things that you can do that to make it really personal. Again,
oh,
I
yeah.
think the more layers that you put into it, it becomes much, much more practical. And if dragon energy is much like other beings' energy, I would think the more you work with what's called you, you'll know what specifically they want.
Oh, absolutely. So. I mean, it's you know, it's it on one level, it's very much like working with, you know, spirit guardian, spirit guides,
right.
Might be a better word for it. You will find out what they like, you know, what is pleasing to them, what opens the doorway for the two of you to commune and exchange energy, and for you to learn and for them to learn. I mean, the reason that I think I do this is because I want to learn. I want to learn how to take better care of my planet. I want to learn how to just be a better person, take responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, you don't, at least in my experience, you don't go out and you don't talk to a room full of dragons. You know, you're going to find a spirit guide, maybe more than one, but you're going to start out with one. And you'll build a relationship and you will find out all kinds of things. And again, like you said, the book is a template, and then it takes off from there. Hopefully.
Something else that you do that's really good is in each chapter you will do, for this, you've got the lore of dragons of making. So you give some historical ancient myths or some reference points, which I think helps you imagine that in your mind's eye.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I love all those stories. Some of them I had to uncover and research for the book. I was not familiar with them, but most of them I already was. And again, like I said, as a kid, it meant one thing. As a teenager, you know, the myths and all meant one thing. But once you start walking a magical path, they start changing. You know, and you look at, okay, the story of this dragon was that, you know, he had this treasure and somebody was coming to get the treasure and he didn't want to have it. And then you start thinking, well, I wonder what the treasure was. Was it really just gold and rings? Could it have been something else? And maybe he was willing to share it. You know, I mean, there's so many different layers to it. But yeah, I really enjoyed including the lore in that. And I tried to bring a little bit of that out in the Seeking Dragons book, concentrated primarily on three myths in that book. But there's a lot more that could have. And some of them are similar, too. So, you know, we concentrated on two Greek myths in Seeking Dragons. And a couple of Scandinavian ones, but there's a lot more than that out there.
Tell me about, and I found it throughout each Sabbat or each throughout the year, not only do you have rituals and you talk about the different dragons, you also meet dragons through meditation, which I like. Tell us about that, how you can meet a dragon through meditation.
Well, I thought that, you know, it's great to write a book about rituals and the dragon lore and everything, but isn't that kind of what everybody wants? Everybody wants to make the connection, right? A personal one. And there's really not anything more personal, esoterically than a one-on-one meditation, you know, solo meditation. So I wanted again to create the template, and you've read the book, you know, it's all about a mountain. It's all about going into a cave using symbols that we already associate, you know, with dragons, most of us. And then once you got inside there, then, you know, the colors change of the crystals and your experience change depending on what the Sabbat is. I used a very similar template for that in Seeking Dragons too. You still have the mountain, you still have a cave. It's not quite the same. And that's something you can go back and experience again and again. You can read it, you could record it, or have someone read it to you. But for me, it gives you about, you know, a 15, 20, or if you want to stretch it out, even 30 minute time in sacred space with you and the dragon energy. And usually a specific dragon is your guide. And you meet that dragon. But what happens after that is going to be very individual.
If someone listens to our show tonight, which I hope they do, and they're get your books and they're interested in this, but they don't know how to start, how do you suggest someone starts reaching out to dragon energy?
I would start with going back to whatever story or myth or whatever it might have been that first like rang the bell. You know, was it when you were reading Game of Thrones? Was it when you were reading the myth of St. George and the Dragon? What was it? I'd start there. I'd go back and I'd read that again, because I'm assuming if they want to be, or if they're listening to the radio show, and if they want to be connecting with dragons, and they're already walking a magical path. So go back to what connected you. And think about that, journal about that, meditate on that. What is it about that particular tapestry in your mind that is calling to you? And try to get a, you know, an image, try to get a picture of whatever dragon it is. Sometimes they show up as human first, but get that in your head, and then start making your offerings. Make your offerings in just a very simple, sincere request that I want to connect with you. I'd like to find out, you know, what's going on. Why do I feel this? Can I turn this into something really positive for dragons and for yourself? But start out very simple. You know, not everybody wants to do ritual. If you don't feel the need to do ritual, then just do meditation. Just spend some time in sacred space. I think there's a lot of benefits from ritual, especially if you do ritual, you know, regularly. And we all know the benefits to that. You're creating these vortexes of energy of what you've been doing, you know, and you continue to do it. So, but I would start out simple. Go back and start with, because the stories is how it came to us to begin with, at least people today. I wouldn't worry so much about, you know, are dragons real? Were they ever real? Were they extinct? You know, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. If it's calling
to you,
they
can be real for you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if it's calling to you and you're curious and you really want to try, do some reading, do some meditation. And then if you want to take the step into ritual, I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think magic, like life is, it's what you make of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You can take it as far as you want, you know?
Absolutely.
And maybe you will find a dragon. I had someone say to me the other day, like, well, because I was like, well, you know, you're probably not going to run into a dragon. I mean, you're not down here, not the physical world. They're like, are you sure? And I'm like, well, no, I'm not.
Right.
I'm not sure. But, you know, it hasn't happened yet.
And I would, and this is just my experience that I have learned. This is why I'm a Potterhead. This is why I thought Harry Potter was so good for a lot of people. I think when I teach creative visualization, a teacher told me once, it's very hard to visualize what you don't know.
Right.
So that's why you start out teaching someone to visualize like a strawberry, because they know what it smells like and taste it.
Right.
So, well, I tell people if they're interested in dragon movies or dragons, I would start watching movies and reading books. So you build that landscape to choose.
You're definitely right. You're getting a visual on what's going on. it is so important, all that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I tell people when they if they struggle with visualization, watch Harry Potter, read a gothic historical romance where the heroine is on the cliffs of the moor, and you know,
Right.
learn to picture, see things, so you have a frame of reference in
Yeah.
your head. So and
I think that's really, really important. And I had very nice ladies. You probably have heard of them, Amber Kay and her lovely wife, Azriel Kay, out in New Mexico years ago. Went to one of their workshops, and they taught me. I had never really thought about this before. How about bringing all of your senses into the experience? Like, take that moment. Like when you start the meditation or whatever it is you're doing, and you begin to, most of us see something first, right? At least that's what we notice. But they were all about, what does it smell like? And
what's
I'm like,
it taste
oh,
like?
What do you mean smell? I never thought about that before. And once you start bringing all of that sensory stuff into it, I remember it better, so I can journal better afterwards. And it makes it more of a visceral experience, at least for me.
I agree. And it's funny, so many, and again, in my family, people would say it smells like rain.
Yeah.
So we do it because we have that terminology in our language. We just don't think about it.
Yeah.
So if I want to do a work unit or I want to focus on weather, then I need to be able to call those memories and call those things up.
Oh, yeah.
So
I think in some of the meditations, hopefully a good bit of them, but I think in some of them, I actually say, you know, take a moment to, you know, see what it smells like. Put your hand on the ground. What's it feel like?
Right.
Is it dirt? Is it rock? Is it sand? I mean, it's such a different, you know, texture, different for everybody, right? So I think it's important. I think it makes it the connection stronger on so many different levels.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking that because I, again, have associated dragons with protection and the fire in the south. So probably for me, something that I could draw up. I'm just sitting here thinking off the top of my head, that smell of sulfur when you do a match would be a really powerful. So I had not thought of that, but yeah, that is something to think about. And to, again, I think all of this is just layers, and your book is a really good start for people that they can just build on their own.
Well, thanks. You know, I've had a couple of folks tell me that, and like I said, it was hard to do. It was very intimidating, and I'm glad that for some folks, you know, it is a good place to start. It's a scary place, you know, the beginning, but you know, you can get you.
Too.
It's exciting, yes, and hopefully that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. You were a great guest. I want you to come back when you get your next project done. You have to come
I
back
will.
And tell us what you're doing.
Yeah, we've got the World Dragon Oracle coming out in August. And
you'll
Stokes.
Have to come back.
Yeah, I will. And Stokes and I worked on that together. She did the art, and it's, you know, she did the covers of both of the dragon books. So, and most, I love Anne's work. So I talked her into doing the Oracle with me. And so it's her artwork, and it's going to be fabulous. And it kind of follows the same building blocks of the other two books.
All right.
So
well,
yeah, I'm kind of excited about that one. So yeah, we'll talk.
Thank you so much. And again, folks, you can go to Llewellyn.com or your local bookstore. And it is Virginia Chandler, and her newest book is The Year of the Magical Dragon. And her first book, which is a great complement to it, is Seeking Dragons. And you can find them both at Llewellyn.com. Besides Virginia, I want to thank Stephen, our sound engineer, for his technical expertise. And finally, I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Whether you're a Reiki student or a seasoned healer, join us on Circle Talk on April 16th as Dawn McLaughlin, the author of Everyday Reiki, shows us how to cultivate a personal relationship with the healing energy itself. Dawn, who is a Reiki master teacher, will discuss how to strengthen intuition, improve mindfulness, reduce stress, and promote healing on all levels. I look forward to being with all of you all again, so please come back. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow nature-centered paths. Join us throughout the week for various programming connecting with the community around the world. Please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSN Podcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. Until next time, many blessings.